Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy. But Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Oh yes, you know what that music means. It's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsors this week, New Relic and Squarespace, for making that possible. DLC is the show all about gaming in its many forms. Gaming games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Cannata, and I'm joined by my co-host, slash friend, slash nemesis, or as I like to call him, my co-ho friend nem. The man who takes St. Patrick's Day so seriously that he will only play Xbox games today, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Yeah, you gotta jump in, just, you know, let the green wash over you. I'm real excited. This very moment has finally come. Today, all my years of training and following Alex around have paid off, and I think I'm going to do a great Alex impression today, so I'm pretty stoked.
That's awesome. He, of course, is referencing the fact that not only DLC today stands for, well, actually, we got a lot of iTunes recommendations of what DLC should stand for. On iTunes, Frego said it's dangerously loaded with cuddles. The Griffin Rider said he's digging the lively conversation. And Faxter said it's dynamically layered communication. We, of course, say that it's your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, it's very special because we have DLC, meaning Dan, my legacy co-host. Because we got Dan Trachtenberg on the show, my old buddy from the Totally Rad show. And he's now a big-time Hollywood movie director. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you for having me. It is my pleasure to bring the D.
You know what's hilarious is both of you guys are, I think, literally the only two people in my Twitter feed that live in Los Angeles that did not live tweet the earthquake this morning. What's going on?
I was reading the tweets. I have to say, I was a little bit scared.
When an earthquake hits, the first thing you have to do is yell earthquake on Twitter, and then after that, make a joke about how hilarious it is after you've gotten over the terror of feeling like the world is going to end.
Yeah. So what was your tweet, Jeff?
Oh, I had so many. You weren't. What were you doing this morning, Christian? Why were you not?
Well, I was raising a child.
Yeah, were you? Was that
goodbye to my in-laws? And also, it was a jolt. I say this half kidding, but we haven't had a really, really big, horrible, you know, a big, really big bad earthquake since social media has been around. And there's going to be a time when it hits and people are doing snarky, silly, dumb comments on Twitter and Facebook. And then they're going to find out later that some of their friends are in the hospital and they're going to feel pretty stupid about posting earthquake. Hope everyone's okay. Good thing I was making a martini. Blah. Meanwhile, their brother's in the hospital.
If there's one thing I know about Christian Spicer, it's that he takes the sober long view of everything. Does not make any jokes in the moment. Thanks, Christian, for bringing us all back down to earth.
Christian, it must have been.
We appreciate all those guys who gave us iTunes rankings and reviews this week. That was really cool. Thanks, all. We got to start the show off, though, because we got a lot to do. This week, we got the Sweet 16 round of March Madness. And we're going to actually do a really, really big, meaty tabletop time.
Tabletop time?
With two guys that actually play board games this week. So let's get right to the first thing we need to do, which, of course, is Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, of course, the segment where we try to convince each other of what the most important story is in gaming. Daniel, as our guest, I will let you have the first contribution. What do you think is the most important story that happened this week?
Oh, of the possible stories that were sent to me to bring up, you mean? Or
anything
you
want to bring up. If you've got other stuff, then you're more than welcome to contribute that. We have a pool, of course, sent in by listeners of the show. DLC is decided by listener contribution, because you can always submit stories throughout the week using hashtag DLCSOTW. That's DLC Story of the Week. And we got a lot of submissions this week of really interesting stories. Of course, this week kicks off, this new week that we're in now is kicking off with what's going to be a big week of stories, because we got GDC starting in San Francisco this week. Sadly, I'm not present. First time in many years I haven't been there. But we did some good stories this last week, too. So, Dan, that was me vamping for you.
Yeah. No, actually, I am more excited than I thought I would be for the this news. I saw this morning on Joystick the Gauntlet being revamped, redone, reimagined slightly, and coming to Steam.
Yeah,
you guys.
Yeah, Gauntlet, the old classic '80s stand-up arcade game with Valkyrie needs food badly. Valkyrie is about to die. Game I loved as a kid too, and it's going to be reimagined by the guys that made Magicka, and I love that game. I think you loved it too, right, Dan?
Yeah, I enjoyed a very fun co-op experience, and I think the original Gauntlet was probably sits alongside with. Well, I guess there were a few co-op games. I mean, there was the Simpsons game and the X-Men game and the Turtles games in the stand-up arcades of our youth. But also, the Gauntlet always reminded me of, what is that, the car game, Off-Road. Super Off-Road, right, with the four steering wheels. But Gauntlet, different than those were all beat-em-ups. Something about being a predecessor to the dungeon crawl experience, the co-op dungeon crawl experience,
I'm
pre-Diablo.
Sure,
right?
I'm pretty sure Gauntlet predates all the other games you just mentioned, too. I think it was
one of those. And now co-op has become a whole new thing. It's been the go-to experience. It's been the premier experience as opposed to the like rare experience. And I think that if it is Diablo 3 meets one of my favorite isometric co-op experiences, that Tomb Raider. Was it called Tomb of Light? Or?
What was that called? I played it too on the Xbox.
Guardians of Light.
Guardians of Light.
That was incredible. Fun combat, but also great platforming, co-op platforming moments in an isometric style. I hope that this Gauntlet is a lot like that. I hope it's not just dungeon crawling, but I love that there's the RPG elements and leveling up. If we could have those experiences similar to Diablo, but with more of that Tomb Raider action platforming experience, I would be probably one of my favorite games. It would be really phenomenal. I, if the more I think about it, the more excited I get.
Well, let me ask you this, though. I mean, how far away from Gauntlet is very simple, right? You know, you walk through the dungeon, you collect gold, and you kill the monsters, and you kill the little spawn points that the monsters come from, and collect keys and get to the next room, and that's pretty much the entire game. And that whole genre you were just raving about, which I love as well, has progressed so far from that. Like, how far away?
I feel like you just described Diablo 3.
Right. Well, yeah, but Diablo has a much more complicated combat system and loot system. And I mean, does Gauntlet need that to be relevant now, or can it be some? Did you watch the video that they put out?
I did. Yeah, that's what I mean. I imagine that it could have more than just A and B as your attack, right? Punch, kick, and magic. Hopefully, it does have Diablo's varied attacks. And also I'm hoping it seems like there's a touch of like hit switches to open whatever. I mean, hopefully there is, if it can have some of the Tomb Raider isometric platforming in it and like needing to be co-op, like needing the other player. That's the other thing. That's why that game was so special, was because it, even if you didn't have another player, the computer had to control someone else, because it, the puzzles were designed. I mean, puzzles, that's actually, if you break it down, I mean, that's what Diablo misses. And that's what I would love to see in this game, are puzzle solving and needing the, you know, cooperative experience to solve those puzzles amidst all fun dungeon crawling and emergent gameplay, as the description said.
Yeah, so far only announced for Steam on PC, and it actually will support SteamOS and Steam machines. They're talking a summer release, and it will have both local and online four-player co-op. Christian, you excited about this game?
I think I am. Well, I think, like you said, Magicka, I mean, to some extent, if Magicka just came out, if it hadn't come out and just came out and was called Gauntlet, I kind of would have been okay with that. You know what I mean? Like, it did enough right that I would have been like, oh, this is interesting. The Gauntlet wasn't this magic dependent, but cool, you know?
I think that this game is going to have a hard time being anywhere near as good as Magicka, to be quite honest, because that game is excellent.
Yeah, that could be a problem. And I'm also glad, like, this, there were rumors of this happening. I think this is exciting. Whereas Tony Hawk coming back and being on mobile isn't exciting. Or, you know, we've talked about on this show, how are they going to redo Doom? Like, so people often said they want redos, remakes, or reimaginings of old franchises. And from what we know of this game, I feel like this is how you do it. It looks like they're doing everything right to have me be excited, and also to think that this game is probably going to be $20, which is pretty awesome.
Well, you're guessing, but I
am totally guessing, but I don't think it's not going to be $60.
Right. Well, yeah, Magicka was a discounted game as well, or, you know, not a full $60 game. Christian, what is your story of the week?
So as I just poo-pooed on mobile, my story of the week is Twitch is finally launching for realsy. Via iOS through Asphalt 8. I think that this is something that we, as, you know, older gamers need to pay attention to. I know I've messed around with Minecraft Pocket, and while Twitch isn't integrated into that yet, to me, I was like, oh, Minecraft Pocket, this is interesting, and kind of a throwaway. And I know they've since improved the version, but the number of people that play it that way is crazy. And I think... not crazy, like insane, like crazy higher number than I thought. And I think now with all these devices, you know, with built-in voice recognition and cameras, you know, it's like Kinect and PlayStation are trying to bundle this stuff with their console. Your iOS device already has all that, and it's had it for years, and we accept it. And if you can get Twitch integrated into that kind of stuff, I think it's going to really continue to push Twitch numbers up and up and up. And I think you could see some really exciting things coming out of that. So now that it's actually happening and seems to be working, or it will work pretty well, I think that's a big story.
I've officially got Twitch story fatigue for story of the week. Is there a week that has gone by that we haven't had a big Twitch story? It's just Twitchification of the world. I know.
That's why it's the big story, though.
Yeah,
no, you're right. They're doing a lot right. I understand, like, for a while it was Nintendo heavy, and like it was Nintendo stories were Nintendo doing poorly. But I think right now Twitch is kind of on fire. And remember when they were just in TV? Oh, the good old days. But it's important. I think it's important to the industry. It's where it's going. Like Dan mentioned, you know, when Gauntlet first came out, it was multiplayer. This is this new crazy thing. Now Titanfall are strictly multiplayer. And right now, I think it's kind of easy to predict or assume that Twitch or that type of next level sharing is going to be the next big thing across all games.
All right, Dan. So tell me, is Twitch on a mobile handheld device the straw that broke the camel's back? Are you wanting to watch people play games?
Listen
on
to
their
the tone
handheld?
Of your voice, Jeff. You're being dismissive. Art, you got to pitch it to Dan like this. Dan, don't you think people being able to share games on their mobile devices through Twitch, don't you think that's the straw that broke the camel's back and made it awesome? That's a great way to ask the question.
Well, I enjoy watching Let's Plays. I enjoy watching Twitch. I mean, I don't frequent Twitch as often as I'll watch stuff on YouTube, but I do watch Twitch on occasion. And so I don't really, all I see this as a necessary, obvious step where our technology has progressed, where being able to stream things from our phones is as easy as it was from our homes. And, you know, I'll watch a Let's Play of like, I mean, I one of the first Let's Plays I ever watched was when Jeff, we reviewed Terraria on TRS, and
can't remember the name of our old show. Can't even remember it. It's so dead to you.
And it was a pause for breath. So that's a game that is, and I watch plenty of streamings of indie games like that, and that's basically a mobile style game. To me, it makes complete sense. I mean, there's no mobile game that I'm done. But you know, here's the thing. I think Twitch has, and streaming games and Let's Plays in general, have sort of replaced the desire for the demo. Because now I'd rather
the
just
review.
Watch. What's that?
It may have even replaced the review.
Yeah. Well, yes. The written. Yeah. I'd rather just watch someone do a little bit of it to see. If I preferred, as opposed to just having to read a little bit or watch a trailer with an audio review. Yeah, I'd rather just watch someone play a little bit and hear their commentary. And, you know, a lot of times I'll go to some of the like Touch Arcade or whatever and read on Thursdays when new games come out and watch a trailer. Or sometimes there aren't even trailers for games and have to just guess. You know, usually it's free. I'll just download it and play it myself. If it costs money, I will pause big time. But when streaming comes in to play, that for mobile games, I'll make better choices in what mobile games I download. So I see it only as positive and very necessary and very sort of obvious.
You know, when Dan says it, it makes so much more sense. I have to retract my former condescending tone. I was just
that's
sitting here thinking,
Dan,
Jeff, I
Dan
just love
saying it.
I just love loving things, Jeff.
Yeah. I know that's your
when Dan says it, he has his two hands out in front of him, making a rectangle, and he's looking through those hands. So you know.
I was just sitting here thinking how much I would enjoy watching someone who can score, you know, 100,000 points on threes. I would watch a Let's Play. I would watch a Twitch stream of that person playing threes so that I could learn to play threes better. Cause I'm stuck. I've plateaued on my threes scoring and, I want to break into the next level. So the right game, even on mobile, would be fun to watch. And I guess the thing that made me feel negative about it was this idea of, you know, your front-facing camera on and watching someone sort of jiggle around their screen, and I get nauseated looking at their head move, and it's a weird positioning. And I don't know. It's a little different than sitting in front on your couch or sitting in front of your computer with a nice webcam or something. But I guess that doesn't really matter.
Well, you can also stream not with your webcam, you know, right? It can just be the game streaming.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. Well, there's been a lot of stories submitted by listeners using that hashtag DLCS2TW, including what I assume to be some Canadian listeners, because this is a big story in Canada. PlayStation 4 is actually raising their price in Canada, $50. That was submitted by Stephen Parr and at JWilder204. And that's, I don't know, that's a little worrisome. Meanwhile, the Xbox is getting price drops and bundles and all this stuff. And Sony's like, you know what? we're charging more for the PS4. Not only that, we're charging more for games. They're going to be $70, some games, including Infamous Second Son and MLB 14 The Show. What do you guys make of this?
Well, for clarity's sake, for the other stateside peeps listening, what is the, and I don't know that you guys will have this answer, but what is the dollar to Canadian dollar, like, is this really just like a price hike that we would experience here, or games actually
cheaper? Well, it's $50 more for them. It's really, it goes from $3.99 to $4.49.
No, but what's the conversion? Oh, here we go. Someone in the chat room is saying US dollar equals $1.11.
That doesn't really matter for them because they're buying it with their dollars, right? So it's whatever, you know what I mean? It's all relative to them. If it would be us buying a PS4 from Canada, we would have to worry about the conversion rate. But
right.
It's relative to their own price structure. So they've been paying $3.99. Now they're paying $4.49. So it went up, you know?
But can they just, this is a, can they buy, well, can they use, can they buy from us? Like, you know, shipping from a, you know, from GameStop?
I don't think so. And I think that basically what you want to be able to do is walk into the store that's down on your corner and buy the machine, right? So it's more expensive and the games are more expensive. It's a strange thing, I guess, because, you know, it's doing real well and they can't. Well, no. They basically just attribute it to marketing, or excuse me, changes in the market environment.
Oh, I thought I read that it was the yen to Canadian dollar or something like that, that it was because of their conversion rate.
Well, that could be what changes in the market environment mean. You know, that's what their official statement was, changes in the market environment.
But for anyway, once, it feels good to be an early adopter, you know, like, ha ha, got mine.
Yeah, crazy. Another price increase this week, which isn't directly related to gaming, but Amazon Prime's going up. So sometimes prices go up, which sucks. $20 more for the yearly Amazon Prime price, which affects me. And I think both of you guys both have it too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we just decided to re-up.
Another user listener submitted story of the week contender by at Steve Gameware. This Koji Igarashi, the producer on Castlevania for 20 years, is leaving Konami, and he is the guy who shepherded that franchise all the way back to Symphony of the Night, which I know is a game you love, Dan.
Yeah.
And he's off to do, basically, he's pulling a Ken Levine. He's starting his own small game development studio where he's going to produce smaller titles. It seems like a trend. What do you guys think about this? Are you sad that Castlevania isn't going to have its steward, Dan?
I predict that he's going to start his own company and he's going to create Castlevania, Mighty Castle Number 9. And it's going to be a Symphony of the Night Kickstarter. That's going to be eerily similar.
You know, it's worth mentioning, there is a mobile game, an iOS game called Devious Dungeon, that is very similar to... I was looking for something to fill in my Dark Souls 2 fix while I have to wait for the PC version to come out. And like Symphony of the Night took over for Dark... When I finished Dark Souls 1, Symphony of the Night was brought to my attention as being the predecessor for it. But in a 2D platforming version, and Devious Dungeon is a great iOS game that has action RPG platforming elements. What it makes me think of, though, is sort of what you're joking about, Christian, is maybe he is going to go back to Symphony of the Night, because Castlevania has certainly, I think it's somewhat good, because I feel like the franchise has gotten stale and they seem to be chasing trends rather than starting their own. And I think this last sequel did not get very good reviews, right? The last one, that's sort of the God of War version of Castlevania.
Right. Yeah.
So whether someone else then takes that into a better direction and, you know, its original creator moves to a platform where he can do something, you know, close to what Symphony of the Night was, could be better for everyone. Could be better for the Castlevania franchise, and be better for getting a new IP from him or whatever.
I like what Lawman said in the chat room. He said he's totally announcing a Kickstarter, which it's that's awesome. Mm. That's awesome that these guys that have been locked in a studio structure for a long time can go out on their own and they have this other option to fund, to use their reputation to make great games to fund a passion project. I think that's cool. I think Lawman, I don't know, the tone seemed to be a little snarky, but I think that's actually an awesome thing. What do you think, Christian?
Yeah, no, I think in the gaming space, even there have been proven successes in Kickstarter. you know, Double Fine stuff has been well received. I just watched this isn't a game, but I watched the Veronica Mars movie this weekend. And if you're a fan of the series, you'll love that. You know, the Pebble Watch was fairly well received. So these are examples of Kickstarters being successes. It's easy to point out the ones where it's like, oh, well, this is dumb. They're just looking for money. But even in the game space, there's been some exciting stuff. And hopefully, yeah, he continues to make great games. I'd rather have someone keep creating things that they're passionate about than sticking around and doing something because they have to, especially when it comes to something creative like gaming. So, you know, more power to him. I hope Konami continues to be successful and make great games. And I hope as an individual or a small team, he continues to make great games and inventive stuff too. That's just more fun for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, if I had to pick a story of the week, I would cheat and not pick something in the gaming space because the biggest story of this week, next week, last week, any week, this month, maybe this year, maybe even more than that, happened just today where we got word that we got proof of the inflation that had been predicted, proving sort of the Big Bang theory. Well, it's not proving it. It still needs to be confirmed. But there is evidence now of this idea of inflation, which was the sort of evidence of the initial burst that happened in the first trillionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a trillionth second of our universe's life. And it looks like they found these gravitational waves that show evidence of that initial moment and kind of prove a theory that was first put out there in the 70s. Super awesome if you're a nerd like me. I urge everybody to check it out. What was the name of the...
Someone posted in the chat, is this New York Times, Detection of Waves in Space, Buttresses, Landmark Theory of Big Bang?
Yep, it's this new telescope that they just got. It's got a funny name. I can't remember. It's like Elbow or something. But it's an acronym. Anyway,
Well, speaking of that, are you guys watching Cosmos?
No, I have a TiVo'd. I can't wait to watch it.
Oh, my God. Jeff, you're going to be...
I'm going to love it, right?
Dude, it is so... I got emotional watching it, and it's... I mean, this is not game-related, but it is content that you can download locally to your hard drive and watch. And it is... it's got this Amblin-esque tone. It's scored by Alan Silvestri, who did a lot of those movies, and the special effects are phenomenal, and it's so aspirational and awesome. It's just awesome. And I worry, though, that I remember watching Cosmos and having to watch it in school in science class and being bored by it, and I'm I'm thinking, oh man, if only I was, you know, a kid today, I would have loved this. But then I'm realizing, but maybe I'm just older and more interested in this.
That's probably
now,
true.
And the kids would still be bored by this. But it's so well. The production value back in the day was amazing too. But for its time. But this is just...
The telescope is called Bicep 2. Thank you, Afwaller, in the chat room. Said Elbow. I knew it was something like that.
You were very... you couldn't be closer.
It stands for Background Imaging of Cosmic Extragalactic Polarization. So if that's not nerdy, I don't know what is. But if you wanted to ask me about a gaming story of the week, I'm going to go with a couple that were both submitted by users. The first submitted by at Geekvine, which is Valiant Comics is teaming with Catalyst Games to do a whole series of tabletop titles. And the first being a role-playing game based on the Valiant universe. So you've got, you know, Exo Manowar and Bloodspot and all these Valiant comic book guys. And they're going to do a whole bunch of tabletop games, which is really cool. Catalyst Games is a company that does a lot of these role-playing games. But they also do really interesting tabletop stuff. They got a game that I'm dying to play. I've heard really good things about that came out last year called The Duke, which is like this abstract reimagining of chess with tiles that add different movement sets to chess, which is sounds fascinating. And then at fgermaine43 said that he tracked this down. I haven't been able to confirm it because he sent a link to a foreign language site, and I haven't seen any other details on other board gaming news sites that I frequent. But he found this news that Bruno Cathala, which is a big name in board gaming, the designer of such titles as Shadows Over Camelot and a game I really love called Cyclades, is teaming with Days of Wonder, the guys who did Ticket to Ride and Memoir 44 and a bunch of other games, Small World, to do his next game. And Days of Wonder is a company that is very selective about the games they publish. They don't put out a ton of releases, and when they do, they're really high quality. And so that's really exciting. There's no details as to what the game is going to be about or what kind of game it will be, but just the idea of those two companies, that company and that designer teaming up, has me very excited. So thanks to those guys for submitting those games. And those are my story of the week contenders. Somehow I think you guys disagree. Christian, tell me I'm wrong.
No, I mean, I think, well, one, you said like four. That's kind of cheating. But I think those are all great. Those are all great stories. The Bicep 2 sounds fascinating. I opened the link and I plan on spending more time reading it when I'm not supposed to be talking into a microphone. But those are all great picks, Jeff. Congratulations. You can pick every story and then win story of the week.
That's how I do. Dude, honestly, that it's so crazy. It's literally like they discovered traces of the waves that carried gravitons, which are the particles are, I'm probably using the wrong word. I'm probably butchering this being just a sort of science fan, not a scientist. But anyway, these are the particles supposedly that carried gravity throughout the universe. And so there's this like concentrated energy force that then cooled and broke off into all the forces of the universe, like electromagnetism and nuclear energy. But this is the initial wave, like that first burst that happened when the concentrated universe exploded in the Big Bang. Fascinating stuff. And would make a great video game, he said, trying to tie it into video games. All right. So that does it for Story of the Week this week. We got a lot to do. We got to get to March Madness because we are in the Sweet 16 round and we got some major matchups. But first, we have to thank our sponsors. First of all, New Relic. We love New Relic. They've been with us since the start of DLC, and they are awesome. And if you've got a web or mobile application, you need to know about New Relic. New Relic is a developer's best friend because it's easy to use. It's an analytics dashboard that gives developers powerful code level visibility into the real-time performance of their apps. That means you can spot bugs, see bottlenecks, and fix problems fast before they ever affect your user. Thanks to New Relic, you no longer have to ship an app to production and then helplessly wait around, hoping for the best until negative app reviews and tweets start to pour in. New Relic empowers software engineers by showing them what's working and what isn't, all in real time. The way it works is very straightforward. New Relic gives developers a lightweight agent that you unpackage into your production-level apps. That agent sits quietly and securely in the background, gathering real-time metrics across geographies, devices, platforms, all the way down to the end-user level, and then displays all that data in real-time graphs so that coders can have total visibility into the performance of their web and mobile applications. So go check out New Relic by visiting newrelic.com/DLC to learn more. And then you can use the offer code DLC30, which will give you a special 30-day extended free pro trial. That's available exclusively to the listeners of DLC. Build better performing apps, get deeper insights, spot bottlenecks quickly, and improve performance with New Relic. They support us. They make this show possible, and they deserve your support as well. So go to newrelic.com/DLC and use that promo code DLC30. All right, boys, it's time for March Madness. Man, we got an intense week this week. Dan, I don't know. I'm sure you have been following with bated breath the March Madness happenings on DLC. March Madness, of course, where we are pitting video games against one another in an NCAA tournament style bracket. People submitted their brackets at the beginning of March. We're giving away three copies of the Titanfall art book, the Art of Titanfall book, which is beautiful. I have a copy myself, and
take
it is
that, Buffett.
Yeah, right? Yeah, we give away some serious cool stuff. It's really awesome. It's beautiful, hardback, gorgeous book. We are now in the second full round. We're going to do the entire second round. If you guys in the chat room want to go check it out, you can go to jeffcanada.com with two N's and one T and scroll down to the DLC March Madness round two, and then you can click on the bracket. We have live voting going on. Everybody's been voting for the winners all week long. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of votes. So let's start things off. We have the number one seed, Super Mario 64, against the number nine seed, which defeated Halo in the first round. Oh, and by the way, Super Mario 64 defeated your darling Dark Souls. I'm sorry.
I know. That. I see. By the way, remind me who these original matchups, how they were put together?
They were submitted by listeners to the show, and people just submitted up to 32 of their favorite games, the games that they thought deserved to be in the tournament. And then I just calculated what got the most votes, and we seeded it based on which games got the most votes. There was a ton of games that got voted on that didn't make the tournament. So you really had to get a lot of votes to even make the tournament, because there were way more than 32 games submitted by listeners.
Got it.
Basically,
I wish that some of them were so easy and some of them are so hard, you know, but I wish that some of them were matched up.
Madness.
I know it is. It really is. I guess that's why I don't watch sports.
That's why I don't watch
sports. I just wanted to, like, Dark Souls versus Super Mario. But if only Dark Souls was up against something else, it could have won, Jeff. It could have won.
Right. Well, that's the madness. It's got to be seeded differently. It's madness.
I know. It really is.
So we are looking at Super Mario versus BioShock. I want to know what you think should win, Dan.
I'm going to go Super Mario 64. Partly because, which can be something that you don't want to always go to with something like this, but because it's the predecessor, that makes decisions a little bit easier. But sometimes it's a little bit unfair, because then the only thing that can win will be an older game and not something that really does something new. But Super Mario 64, there would be no BioShock without Super Mario 64. But that, I just, if you go...
I understand it, but I love the thought that, like, they played Super Mario 64 and they're like, I want to innovate on this. I got it. Dark Souls.
No, BioShock.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, even more. Yeah.
It's the original, but 3D experience, that predecessor to first person shooters in many ways. But it also just took our no other game post first seeing video games, I don't think, really took our breaths away as much as Mario 64 did. That was like, oh my God, a game is that is a video game? It functions like that now? And BioShock was a well-made game. I also like it less than most people, so it's a little bit easier for me. But that did not take my breath away. That was not... and if anything, I could see where you might land on this, Jeff, but I think Super Mario 64 is... I know what you're going to say. But in advance of that, you know, functioning storytelling in an innovative way and functioning way, telling a story that only a video game could function, phenomenal. But Mario 64, guys, there's very few moments in our lives, at least in our video game playing lives, that will hit us the way that Mario 64 hit us. That's all I'm going to say. So that's my pick.
Christian, what do you think?
Yeah, Mario 64, it's also, I think, the best pack-in game ever. Talk about, you could just buy a system and just keep that game. Mario 64 is incredible. Again, I think that
not the best packing game ever.
Okay, what am I forgetting?
The best packing game ever is also on this list, and we will be debating it later on this
Tetris.
Episode.
Yes, that's a great game.
I was going to say Super Mario World. Super Mario World is the best. I think World is better than Super Mario 64, personally.
I'm blanking. That was a pack-in?
For Super NES, yeah.
No.
Didn't it come with Super NES?
No.
It may have.
Yes, it did. It was a launch game. Chat room, where you at?
I think that was why I went Genesis. One of the reasons why I went Genesis and my wealthier friend was able to do Super Nintendo was because you had to buy the system and the game separately, whereas Genesis came packed in with Sonic, which, by the way, pack-in games, amazing. By the way, the best pack-in game is Duck Hunt and Super Mario Brothers combined. Two games.
Super Mario Brothers didn't come with it. It came with Duck Hunt and Gyromite initially.
Okay. All right. Then our memories
right. It was published by Nintendo as a pack-in launch title for the Super Nintendo. Why do I not remember
you.
That?
Drop the mic.
Interesting. Well, regardless, two great Mario games. Back to this. Mario 64 beats Bioshock. Bioshock is a great game, and it's the type of game that I would hope a studio would be created around and then disbanded around a couple of games later.
Oh, man. I will speak for Bioshock because... Honestly, Super Mario 64, while great and while basically invented the 3D platforming genre, is not my favorite Mario. In fact, it's not even my favorite top five Marios. It's well behind a lot of the 2D Marios, almost all of the 2D Marios. And Bioshock, for me, ranks higher in my personal list of all-time games just because it's more along the lines of what I want out of a video game. And there are Mario games that do Mario better than Mario 64, in my opinion. And there aren't any games that do Bioshock better than Bioshock. Do you know what I'm saying? So in that convoluted, relativistic brain gymnastics that I just did, I'm voting for Bioshock. But I want to find out what a caller has to say before we even go to the statistics. Because the statistics may surprise you. Okay, we got a caller from 314. You are on the air. What do you think, Super Mario 64 or Bioshock?
Hard to say with two games that are spaced so far apart in my memory. Super Mario 64, I mean, great game. It had redefined 3D platforming, but Bioshock also kind of redefined the first-person shooter with the ability to tell an immersive story and really engage a player in emotional ways. And I think, you know, when it all comes down to it, I prefer Mario over Bioshock, so my vote goes with Mario.
All right. It looks like you guys are ganging up on me on this one. Let's check out the statistics. Where's my statistics tab?
Before you go there, Jeff, can I just lobby something back at you, which is a lot of the credit that you give Bioshock, I think you could give, and what our caller just has, as he just described it, I think you give all that credit to Half-Life 2, which we are going to encounter later, whereas all the credit that we give Super Mario 64, you cannot give any other title.
Yeah, you guys are right, and the votes are pretty... overwhelming. 64.2% for Super Mario 64, 34.8% for Bioshock. So it sounds like Super Mario 64, the number one seed, will progress. All right, on to the next ranking. We got Fallout, which destroyed Doom to get as the number five seed to get to the second round, against Red Dead Redemption, which beat Persona 4. So we got the four seed Red Dead Redemption against the five seed Fallout.
And to clarify, because someone might have missed a week, this is what Fallout, Jeff?
Fallout 3. Excuse me. Yeah, Fallout 3. I should have put that in the... Yeah, it's Fallout 3. So this is the Bethesda reimagining of Fallout. And this is Red Dead Redemption by Rockstar Games. Both of these big, sprawling, open-world role-playing games that tell really interesting stories, both of them in desolate wastelands. In a way. Daniel, where do you sit? I think I know where you're going, but
Yeah, this is an easy one if you know me. However, I will say that I love Fallout 3's combat system, that VAT system, and I played New Vegas again recently, probably a year ago, which I guess isn't that recent, but it's more recent than when it came out, because I really just loved that combat system. I wanted to experience that again, and I wish that it was used more often and ripped off and done for a variety of different games. But all that's to say, Red Dead Redemption is just one of the greatest games ever, impacted my worldview. You know, impacted the way I view history and the human experience as much as it was fun to play and a great story to experience. And
that's an interesting point.
Great. A plus on every technical level. Great score, great sounding, great looking, great playing, all of those things. Great writing, great acting. But really awesome. Yeah, really made me appreciate that time period more than any history class has or movie has. So my pick. And one of the best video game endings, period. Full stop.
That's true. I would agree with that too. I will go before you, Christian, because I'm going to put my vote in for Fallout 3. As much as I love Red Dead Redemption, I really, really love Red Dead Redemption, and it is amazing. I just feel like the systems in Fallout 3 for me are much more fun. Yes, the world, the storytelling, all that stuff is cool, but I didn't find myself wanting to do all the side stuff in Red Dead Redemption. I may be in the minority in that respect, but I didn't want to go and search the woods for treasures and rope bad guys and, you know, interact in all those ways. I liked that the game had all that, but I didn't find myself wanting to do that just because I didn't enjoy controlling my horse. I didn't enjoy roping. It wasn't the systems weren't fun. I enjoyed shooting much more than I had in any previous Rockstar game, but in Fallout 3, I wanted to search every nook and cranny. I wanted to exist in that universe as long as I could. I wanted to do every mission. I loved discovering new items and combining them and building things and attacking enemies and exploring. Every second of that game, I was immersed and had a great time. So I picked Fallout 3. Christian?
Yeah, I'm going to go to Red Dead. I've talked about this before. Red Dead is by far my favorite Rockstar game. It's the first, or one of the few, if not the only, open world game where I really enjoyed just traveling around the world and didn't look to fast travel. And I also think it's one of the few open world games where the side missions make sense. Like in the Wild West, there might be treasure buried out in the woods versus, you know, as much fun as it is to collect orbs and crackdown and stuff, it's just, here's a collectible. And it's lots of fun, but the Red Dead collectibles and side missions fit the world. I also think like Stop a Stagecoach from Being Robbed or whatever feels more real than in Grand Theft Auto. You know, some of the side missions there where it's feels a little more forced to me. The reason I would go to Red Dead over this is that I usually prefer a type of game where I am playing a character and I'm following their narrative versus the more I insert myself as the character type world. And while you had a character in Fallout and it wasn't World of Warcraft where you're creating your person from whole cloth, so to speak, I feel like the Red Dead narrative was really strong, and that's why it would tip my vote that way.
Christian, that is such a great point. Something that I've been thinking about as well recently, like just the idea of as immersive as the attempt is to make you the character, it's so much more immersive and why movies are and books are the way they are and affect so many people is because it's more immersive to connect with the guy that's going through the set of experiences, and you feel those experiences as well. Last of Us is a great example of that also.
We'll get there.
As a
jerk. I see that matchup.
I didn't do it.
As opposed to just saying you're the guy and you're experiencing, it's hard to feel what's happening. It's hard to be excited to win that battle when it's just me I'm not actually there, you know, but identifying with what the guy's feeling and wanting to win it for him because you know why he wants to get what he needs to get, all that stuff is more immersive than you would think. That's such a great point, Christian.
All right, 949, you are on the line. What do you think on this one? What have you got? Fallout 3?
You know, I think...
You know, I think Jesse brought up an interesting point in that Fallout is a lot more of just kind of exploring and you discover the world on your own. And Red Dead kind of takes a really different approach where it's a much more tailored experience, kind of what you're talking about when you pitted Uncharted versus Grand Theft Auto. So I think it's a lot more just personal preference. And for me personally, I think Red Dead Redemption really shines for a lot of reasons, just a really polished game. And it's hard to ignore just Undead Nightmare is probably one of the best DLCs that I think I've ever played.
Yeah, it's interesting, although I think the Fallout DLC, I can't even say it, it's the name of my own show. The Fallout DLC was also excellent, if I remember correctly, although I don't remember if it had a name. But good points. It sounds like I'm going 0-2 because statistically, Red Dead Redemption has a 56.2% of the vote and Fallout has 41.8.
Close.
So I'm close. 0-2. You guys are 2-0 with your stupid votes. And we're moving on. Congratulations to Red Dead for that win. These next two might be the hardest ones for me. We've got Shadow of the Colossus versus Half-Life 2. Shadow of the Colossus, the 11 seed with the big upset over the 5 seed in the last round, Call of Duty. And Half-Life 2, the number 3 seed, which beat Metal Gear Solid to get here. Oh, man. These are both amazing games.
This is disgusting. This is foul. This is an abomination. These should not be. This is like asking. Remember the movie? It's not called Warrior. It's like asking two brothers to fight each other in the ring. It's not family on family. It should not happen.
Or putting three of last year's final four teams all coming out of the same side of the bracket this year. That's crazy.
Disgusting.
Sports. That's sports, guys. Sports.
Sports. Can we talk about science again? All right, Dan, what is it going to be, man? There can be only one.
Honestly, these are my two favorite games, period. Full stop on that. And they are wildly different experiences, and it's I'm not really. Here's the thing. there's nothing like Shadow of the Colossus is in a genre all its own. Shadow of the Colossus, Jeff, is we both share the same opinion about the movie United 93.
Yeah.
In that is an incredible movie. It's hard to compare it to any other movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's so singular and so like that no other movie can match the emotions that are driving that. And Shadow of the Colossus is there's no other game like it. It is profound. It is exciting to play. It is an emotional ride. It is atmospheric like no other game. I mean, it's just an incredible, great, wonderful art and art style like we've not seen other than in Eco. So incredible. Half-Life 2 is just the pinnacle of gaming. It did what many people credit BioShock for doing many years prior. Incredible. It taught me a lot about storytelling. One of the best interactive story experiences, I think, while still being an exciting act. You know, a lot of times those great story, interactive storytelling experiences are in video games more like, the David Cage games, Heavy Rain and, you know, all that stuff. But this is still a great first-person shooter with puzzles and scare. It's got everything. It's firing on all cylinders. How could one pick?
And yet you must.
I don't know how to pick, dude. I might have to go, God, I don't know. I don't know. High
right,
art
come back
versus
to you. We're coming back to you.
Art,
Christian.
High art meets commercialism, so I'll go Half-Life 2. Because it's at least it's got both. Wow. It's not just high art. You know?
Wow. But he's going populist. Christian, yeah. What do you think?
This is tough. This is very tough. I will say my vote first and then I'll dive into a little bit of reasoning. My vote is to Shadow of the Colossus.
Good. Good.
I think it gave me all the feels. Half-Life 2, I've only played through Shadow of the Colossus completely once. And I went back to play it again when they did the HD re-release, and I decided I don't want to have a different experience than the time I had it the first time. And I know that it's not, there aren't branching paths and whatever, but that first time I played it was so perfect for me that I didn't want to go back and go through it again. Half-Life 2, I have played through numerous times, you know, on the Orange Box alone when it came back out, and since I've gone back via Steam and played through it again. And it is a phenomenal game that holds up so well and tells a story in a first-person setting so well. But what makes Shadow of the Colossus, for me, get the vote is its elegance and its simplicity, which I guess you could say, yeah, Jeff, that makes me a hipster. It does so much with so little. And I would love to have been in that pitch meeting where it's like, okay, I have a, whatever it was, 25-hour game or 12-hour, I forget how long it is. But I have this X number of hour-long game, and in it you're going to fight, I don't know, four people. No, four, that's not enough. Okay, eight, there's a game. Like, that's incredible. Just the confidence in that game and in the design, and we've seen nothing like it since. And I keep waiting for, why is the name
escaping? Last Guardian.
Yes, Last Guardian to come out, and it just hasn't been there. So to me, it's a pinnacle of a type of gaming that has yet to come again. And while Half-Life 2 is probably the best of that kind of game, a lot of other games get very close to a great story first-person shooter. And for me, Shadow of the Colossus is a class unto itself.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Agreed.
407, you're on the line. What is it? Half-Life 2 or Shadow of the Colossus?
Hey, guys. Actually, the same caller from 2 weeks ago who spoiled Shadow, so this time I'll try to refrain from that. I think I'm going to lean towards Christian's thinking and go with Shadow. I don't think there's been something since that time that's equal what Shadow was trying to do. I mean, I think the biggest memory I remember is that I think after the third or fourth Colossus, I already started feeling bad about what I was doing. I still didn't feel quite right taking down these creatures. And I think this tells you how much that game did with so little. And the other thing I wanted to say is while you and Dan are on the line is that I think you guys should have a segment called Gems and Man where Dan teaches Jeff how to play Dark Souls 2.
Well, that actually may happen. I think we're both waiting for the PC, right, Dan?
Mm-hmm. I actually pitched to Jeff this weekend that I would do that with Dark Souls 1 in preparation. So we're on your wavelength, my friend.
We very well may happen. Yeah. I am struggling with this one, but I'm going Half-Life 2. It's
just because you want to get one right this time.
I want to get one right. And the people are with me. It's 68.5% for Half-Life 2 and 29.1% for Shadow of the Colossus. I honestly think this is a popularity contest, and I think Half-Life 2 is more popular. Strangely, these are both games that people want sequels to, and that won't happen. They keep not being announced. Half-Life 2 just is that game. It's probably my top two games ever. So, you know, it's hard to beat that. But I bought a new TV for Half-Life 2, whatever. All right. Moving right along. This is a hard one, too. Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, the number 2 seed, versus the number 10 seed, which I made an argument for last week as being, bar none, the best video game of all time because it will always be played on every conceivable platform. In fact, after I said that, somebody tweeted me the fact that this game has been ported to a business card. There's a guy who has a business card where you can play Tetris, and proof that literally if there's a platform, there will be Tetris on it. So Tetris, the number 10 seed versus Zelda Ocarina of Time, representing all the Zeldas really on this list. Dan.
That's an interesting point. When you put that heat on it, Jeff.
I didn't mean to do that. I didn't have to do that.
Well, here's the thing. You know, Jeff, we actually had a discussion not too long ago about how I wonder if there will be another chess, checkers, you know, just like a game that is timeless,
ubiquitous,
that everyone plays. You know what I mean?
It's Tetris.
Yeah, it's Tetris. That's Tetris. And for that reason, Tetris should win the entire March. Man, I mean, Tetris is Tetris, you know?
Like, I think that's a viable winner for the entire thing, is to say Tetris is the greatest game of all time.
It's quintessential. It's quintessential. Yeah. It is fun. It is addicting. It's everything that you equate a game. It is not modern in that there is no, well, you could argue that the story in it is like the story of what the user experiences, but it's very much that thing that prevents games from becoming art, you know, that people see things like Tetris and say a video game is not, you know.
I think that Tetris will be played in 100 years, and I don't think Ocarina of Time will.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But then, I mean, that's an interesting perspective lens to see the rest of March Madness through.
Let me just say this. Well, you don't have to. Well, let me just say this too. I'm not going to say which game is which, but right now the statistics are 50.3% versus 49.7%.
Gosh.
On this one. So, Christian, where do you come down?
I come down like a straight piece to get a Tetris.
That we've all been waiting for.
Finally, I've cleared you out. Tetris, Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time is a phenomenal game. It is not my personal favorite Zelda. This is not a slight to Zelda in any way, shape, or form, but Tetris is beautiful. The only thing that tarnishes Tetris's legacy is how they keep trying to make crappy sequels to it. Some have been okay, but the original is so dang good. You can't touch it, to quote a great rapper, and Tetris it is.
I'm going to go to the phones and go to 801. What do you think, Ocarina of Time or Tetris?
Wow, all of these matchups are so hard. Honestly, so Tetris, the thing I see wrong with Tetris is, and this will sound strange, but in the world of video games, you want to enter a place that you can have experiences that kind of take you somewhere else. So like with Zelda or Red Dead Redemption or any of those places, it's a world that you can interact with and that you can make choices and the game gives you feedback, and that type of fiction really draws you in. And I don't know, sure, we'll be playing Tetris in 100 years, but 100 years ago we were playing checkers or whatever, and it's still a great game. It will still be a great game 100 years from now, but I don't think it necessarily should go as far as the end. Maybe it beats Zelda, but in my mind, Zelda's better.
That's an interesting point. I mean, I certainly wouldn't put checkers up there as a as the best board game of all time. I mean, maybe you'd have to maybe say chess. Is though.
It'd be chess.
The statistics say right at this second, people are still putting in votes, but right at this second, Legend of Zelda is squeaking by 50.2%.
I may have to ask for a recount.
Well, I'll refresh the page.
I'm getting more iOS devices and I'm logging into your website. I know why you're doing this, Jeff. Page views.
Oh, man. So you said Tetris, Christian. Dan, you said Tetris?
Yeah.
I said Tetris as well. Should we go against the will of the people? It's a squeaker, so we could go against the will of the people.
Hold on. Let me log out of the chat room real quick.
Well, let me ask you guys this. What it is Ocarina of Time, Christian, is not your favorite Zelda game. Is it yours, Jeff?
I think it is, yeah. I think it is. Yeah.
You know what's interesting about Zelda? I feel like everybody prefers its sequels. Then no one ever talks about the original Legend of Zelda.
Well, it got a lot of votes for the tournament, the original. I mean, every Zelda got votes. Every single Zelda. Even the DS Zeldas got votes, like Spirit Tracks. Every single Zelda got a vote in the tournament.
But that's also because the original Link to the Past does everything the original Zelda does, but better.
I think we're gonna reverse the will of the people and do Tetris in a massive, incredible upset.
Wow.
This is
the
big
dictatorship.
Big.
This is the referees calling a few extra fouls in the final minute to sway the game. No big deal.
That's what it is. Okay, so we just cleared out the entire Kanata division of the bracket, the left-hand side of the bracket. We're about to head to the right-hand side of the bracket where there's some major matchups there as well. But first, we have to thank our other sponsor, Squarespace. Dan, our old friends, Squarespace, are back to sponsor DLC. We love Squarespace. I know you use it every day. I use it every day. You've heard me tell people to go see jeffcanada.com to find out the bracket and get the links for the voting. jeffcanada.com is on Squarespace, and I think it looks pretty snazzy. It's super easy. That's the best thing about Squarespace is it's easy. It's an all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own websites, and they're going to give you a free trial and 10% off if you go to squarespace.com and use the offer code GROK. That's GROK, GROK. They picked that because I always talk about grokking games. GROK, GROK, gets you 10% off, gets you a free trial at Squarespace, and it helps us because they know you're listening to our show. Squarespace is awesome. They are constantly updating their platform with new features, new designs, more support. They have incredible templates that make your website look awesome, that let you start off without having to start from scratch. Tons of style options for you to adjust so you can create your own space that doesn't look like a template. It looks like its own thing. And everything is drag and drop. It's WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. It's super easy to add content from your desktop or from your phone. They have a mobile app that lets you, you know, add stuff to your website on the fly. It's awesome. Squarespace makes sure your site automatically looks great on any device, because every Squarespace website has its own unique mobile design. So that it's designed twice, really. You can easily connect Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram, Google, and many more web and social services. Squarespace has an e-commerce on their platform. So if you want to set up shop and sell things, you can do that. It's super easy to use. I honestly use it every single day. It's something that I can vouch for personally. I've been using it for almost a decade now as well. I think like 7 or 8 years we've been going on Squarespace. And the best thing is that if you even need some help, they have over 70 Squarespace employees on their customer care team. It's just based in New York. They are available for live chat during the week, and they have super fast email support throughout the day and night. I know, Dan, you've used that. I've used that. It's awesome. And the free trial that they're offering is so free, no credit card is even required. So if you decide to purchase, it starts at just $8 a month and includes a domain name if you sign up for a year. Make sure to get 10% off and support our show by using the offer code GROK, G-R-O-K. And thanks to Squarespace, go to squarespace.com/DLC. I love those guys at Squarespace. I'm so happy that they're sponsoring this show.
Can I just say, Jeff, I love the way that we went against the will of the people for Tetris, a game that came out of Russia. It just feels very...
in theme, it's very thematic.
That's awesome.
It felt appropriate.
I love it. Okay, Spicer side of the bracket, starting off with this incestuous Naughty Dog Civil War.
Naughty, Naughty Dog.
Naughty, Naughty Dog.
You did this whole stupid tournament just to get me to this point, to have it in the Evil 16. There's nothing sweet about this matchup, Jeff. Uncharted 2 and The Last of Us? Oh my God. Just, why don't you just have my only child fight my soon-to-be, eventually maybe at some point born second child, do a battle to the death where the only loser is me.
Well put. Christian, you're welcome to kick us off with this one. Go ahead.
The Last of Us, but it hurts. It hurts. Yeah. I feel like characters feel in that game, you know, I just it hurts. But yeah, Uncharted 2 is the best Uncharted. The Last of Us 1 is also the best Last of Us, though, so I have to go.
That's genius. Boy, are we on me now?
You're on you now.
Oh man, guys, I think you got to lean towards I hate doing this because we had to lean towards Last of Us because as exhilarating as it was, we were also so moved by it. And you know, it's almost like, I'm trying to think of what the perfect Spielberg analogy is, because you know, Uncharted is very much Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that it's incredible that Raiders of the Lost Ark was nominated for Best Picture. It's one of the few adventure movies, you know, was that story is somewhat frivolous, to get that accolade. And Uncharted does so everything so well. And its story stuff is made of good stuff, and it's so fun. And there's a lot of that deserves a lot of credit. But to be moved the way we were in Last of Us. And by the way, not take away it, you know, Jeff, you really spoke to me in speaking about Fallout 3 versus Red Dead Redemption in terms of just the game system was so amazing. And the game system in Last of Us, I think it was incredible. I played that game like I haven't played any other game like it. Really, really feeling like someone who was surviving in a post-apocalyptic scenario, not just post-apocalypse is the setting and I'm playing it like any other game. And I was running over. I was running away. I played most of the game running away and trying to get away. Like I was really there. I wasn't just shooting things and or even stabbing things. I was sometimes doing that. It was just amazing. Uncharted, I will say I went back and am replaying Tomb Raider Definitive Edition on the PlayStation 4 now, and its game system sort of one-ups Uncharted's game system, just breaking it down like that. Its story and its writing and its all that does not compare. But and it wouldn't exist without Uncharted, so that's ridiculous. But anyway, it just all helps me lean towards The Last of Us.
This is Raiders of the Last Ark. Lost Ark was nominated, but Schindler's List won.
Right, exactly.
Oh, come on. Last of Us is not Schindler's List.
Last of Us is more commercial than Schindler. I mean, Last of Us is more like, I wish I could find the better Spielberg analogy, but.
But he doesn't have any other winners than that, right? I thought that's his only other.
I think he just won.
Lincoln, right?
You know what it is? It's Private Ryan versus Raiders of the Lost Ark. Is what it is.
It's Private
Ryan. But no, he just won. What did he do after Schindler's List?
He went for Lincoln, didn't he? Or no,
he didn't win for Lincoln. Wasn't there something, because that was the whole thing, was he had only won for, or am I thinking of Scorsese for Departed? Maybe you know, I am. Anyway, sorry.
Christian, you can't play into Dan's hand and make everything about movies. All right, I'm taking a call. 314, you are on the line. What do you think between these two Naughty Dog games?
Oh, hi, this is Mike from St. Louis. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Between The Last of Us and Uncharted, I'd have to say Last of Us. I mean, Uncharted is great fun, and God love Nathan, you know, one of the greatest characters of last generation for sure. But Last of Us just takes it to a whole new level.
Yeah, you know,
the popularity of the Uncharted games has definitely helped the industry as a whole, but Last of Us changed everything.
I'm inclined to agree. As much as I prefer playing Uncharted, I really enjoy that universe more. It's fun. It's more my sensibility. It, you know, it's not fun to be in the Last of Us universe. I do have to acknowledge that it's a better game, just sort of in every way. Artistically, it's great. But I would rather play Uncharted than Last of Us. So the people agree, 59.5% for Last of Us, 37.6% for Uncharted 2. So Last of Us, congratulations, you're moving on. Next up, GoldenEye 007, the number 5 seed against Mass Effect 2, the 4 seed. So 4 versus 5. I have to say I'm not too passionate about either of these games, to be quite honest. What do you think, Dan?
Interesting, Jeffrey. You know, the one interesting thing about this is that I cannot imagine, and maybe I should reflect back on everything in this lens, but this is very much March Madness for our generation. I can't imagine a 20-something even thinking about GoldenEye at all. And it would be a no-brainer for Mass Effect 2. Like, GoldenEye isn't even, it's not like
it's
I
of
can
its
recognize
time.
As a 20-year-old, though I did not enjoy the Manchurian Candidate, I can recognize why it was so great in its time or whatever.
Right.
There are movies that I watched as a 20-year-old that stood up to the test of time. I don't think GoldenEye does anything. And most video games, you know, don't favor as well as movies. Sorry to talking about it through that way. But I am going to go GoldenEye because even though it's generational, boy oh boy, that time period. It was Ocarina and GoldenEye, me and my friend after school, skipping school even to play. But God, that was so much fun. I have not had as much fun playing a multiplayer first person shooter as I did playing GoldenEye. Yes, even considering like Left 4 Dead, or even though it's not, well, I guess it is. And that blast, we have played together, a blast. But GoldenEye, nothing compares to that. And all the different modes and the customizable ways that we could play it with each other are so much fun. So for that reason alone, I'm going GoldenEye. Mass Effect 2, phenomenal. I enjoyed that better than the first one. I think that is, as I'm sure, why it was picked. It's the pinnacle of that series. And firing on all cylinders. But replayability, it suffers a little bit, I would say. And just GoldenEye is just a special gaming experience.
Christian?
Yeah, I vote for GoldenEye. I'd vote for the Wii version if possible. No. GoldenEye is a great game. And just wanted to say quickly, I went back and replayed. I remember the first time, slight GoldenEye N64 spoiler here. I remember the first time you're crawling, that level starts, you crawl through the air duct and you can peek out and shoot the guy with your silenced PP7 in the head as he sits in the toilet.
Your PP against his PP?
Yes. I thought that was so amazing. I loved it so much. And the multiplayer, I thought was phenomenal. Mass Effect 2 is the best Mass Effect game, in my opinion. But it's not even the best. Why am I blanking on BioWare game? I don't think that would go to Knights of the Old Republic. So I vote for GoldenEye.
479, tell these guys why they're wrong and Mass Effect 2 should progress. I'm guessing.
Hey, guys, this is Billy from Northwest Arkansas. Hey, actually, I vote GoldenEye 2. There's nothing more important than, sorry, man, but sitting on the couch and being able to look your friend in the eye while you shoot him, there's nothing that compares to that experience with actually playing with real human beings instead of over Xbox Live or chat.
Wow. I loved GoldenEye. I'm just shocked because statistically, GoldenEye is getting its butt kicked. And I thought for sure that, that's not true. It's 54.8% against 44.1%. So that's not that bitch of a big butt kick. It's pretty close. But the people are speaking Mass Effect. And
what if that's evidence to what I was saying, where if you weren't of the generation, then it's meaningless. But you know what's important to mention about GoldenEye? Because I spoke a lot about that multiplayer, and we're all commenting on that, except Christian, you made a great point about the single player aspect of the game. And what can be overlooked is that growing up in our generation, we would read books, read comic books, watch movies, and wish, and we would play with our action figures or play even just ourselves running around. I used to play Big Trouble in Little China with my friend, and I was Jack Burton, and he was, we wish that we could be a part of those things that seem so incredible in all the other medias. And GoldenEye, for the first time, it was one of the first games that made, because every other game, even like Zelda, you didn't feel like you were in a Lord of the Rings verse. It didn't quite compare. The cover art elicited our imaginations, and none of the games could match that imagination. But GoldenEye, it really finally was like, I felt like James Bond, which was incredible. But even more at the heart, I felt like a spy. I felt like I was this action hero. that I always wanted to feel that way, and nothing really. And that is some. By the way, we went Last of Us, but Uncharted tapped into. Finally, you felt like Indiana Jones in a way that you possibly couldn't before. But anyway, GoldenEye is very special for that reason.
I like what Trojan said here in the chat room. Nothing compares to that experience, except for getting an epic universe-spanning story where you make deep connections with interesting fleshed-out characters. Oh, man. I don't know. Can we go against the will of the people again?
I'm fine going with the people on this one. I mean, my personal pick is GoldenEye, but people love Mass Effect. I mean, I think we all were or may have been at the Wii U announcement at E3, and they announced Mass Effect 3 for the Wii U, a game that was already out on other systems, and I know that it was a Nintendo faithful crowd, but it got a roaring applause break. Like, people were like, yeah, we love this game.
Yeah, it's true, man.
People love it. The books sell well. If I'm not mistaken, one of them or many of them, several, have been on the Times bestseller list. It's a universe people love.
All right, I'm willing to accept it. Mass Effect 2, progressing. The will of the people cannot be ignored this time. this next matchup is my Last of Us versus Uncharted 2. This is my Alamo. This is the one where I don't know. Actually, the next two are like that.
Really?
You go first then.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I just feel like, okay, Street Fighter 2 versus Skyrim. Skyrim, the number 3 seed. Street Fighter 2, the number 5 seed. They're just so disparate games. It's hard to compare them. I mean, I'm going to pick Skyrim, but my heart... Yeah.
I think Dan just dragon punched you through the internet.
Hadoukened.
I mean, It's Jeff, hard.
Come on. Listen, but okay, let me put it in perspective. And I we don't even need to bring historicalness in the Skyrim. I feel like everything that you could say that's great about Skyrim is something that you would say about a great game. Like, it's all, none of it. What did Skyrim do that transcends the genre? You know, like, what did, is Skyrim better than BioShock? I mean,
are you whispering dragons over there, Jeff?
It's got dragons in it. There's dragons.
But I mean, it's not at all like. It's not even. Oblivion is. It's quite. I mean, that, and that is your jam.
But Oblivion,
you know,
isn't on the list.
I know.
The Gru says it's Hadouken versus Fus Roda.
Dude, it's just a really well done game. It's just a really great game for sure.
I know. I love it. I know.
But it's not Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
this last
week
when I went off on how much Street Fighter 2 meant to me and how I thought it could end all wars in the world.
And so, by the way, like, couldn't you play Street Fighter 2 today instead of a modern game? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
I have it on my business card.
It's still a great fighting game, and it is like,
oh my god, I would so get that business card if I could. All right, Christian, clearly Dan wants Street Fighter 2. What do you think?
I would also vote for Street Fighter 2. We didn't get to it for Story of the Week, but the last ultimate, super, mega, ultimate, penultimate release of Street Fighter 4 announced their last character. I mean, that's a series that people still love, and Street Fighter 2, some variation of it, is, I think, the best version of that series. It's timeless in the way that Tetris is timeless for a puzzle game. And Skyrim, overrated.
Winnebago Man asks, does Street Fighter 2 have a mod that lets you fight Macho Man?
Probably.
That's a good question. Oh, yeah. Coming to get you.
This is truly an unfair matchup. Once again, it's
popular like recent game versus old.
Yeah. And it's like, old game. Skyrim would win against something else. But it's not.
All right. 614, help me out of this. Meyer, what do you think? Skyrim or Street Fighter 2? Are you there, 614?
No. Oh, yeah. Street Fighter 2 for sure, Jeff. you're an idiot. And I just want to say I agree with whatever Christian says. And then when Dan agrees with Christian, I agree with Dan also. Thanks for taking my call. Wichita State out.
401. You're on. Yes.
Hi. So, first of all, I just say, after listening to, I think it was last week, I picked up Persona 4 Golden, and it would definitely get my vote over Red Dead. It's amazing.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
As far as Skyrim over Street Fighter. I should have played Street Fighter, but I played 4. So now I can just pour hours and hours in Skyrim. And my friends compare stories and stuff like that. There's something intangible about Skyrim.
Intangibles, the guys. He's talking about the intangibles of Skyrim.
Now, Jeff,
craftiness?
Hearing that, doesn't that make you want to vote for Street Fighter 2 even more?
It does a little bit. Street Fighter 2 is getting 47% of the vote, while Skyrim is getting
51.7%.
Oh. We're getting too old for this stuff.
Yeah. It's generational. I hate the way that I must sound to people right now. I hate it.
Yeah, well, you know. It is the words coming out of your mouth. I think you got to go with Skyrim, guys. I'm sorry.
I'm not going to pull my. I'm saving my other veto, and it's not going to come yet. I'm not going to, you know, back myself into a corner on this one. I'll let it go, but it will be in protest, good sir.
It's like American Idol. We get a judge's save. We all get a judge's save.
Yeah.
Well, there'll be a whole twist.
I should have used mine this week because I'm not going to be. I mean, this is my chance.
You might have to use yours in the next matchup, Dan, because we got number 7 Portal versus number 2 Super Mario World. Now, tell me how you're going to vote on that one.
This is easy for me. I don't have the Super Mario World. Awesome. Played the death. I mean, amazing. Great game. Great Mario game.
I think it's the best Mario game for me. Yeah. Hands down, best Mario game.
I don't think so. But a great game. Phenomenal. It's merely a great game. Portal is a great game. It's a great short film. It's a great no. It
no argument there.
Actually, Portal really transcends like the medium of video game, you know, and it's hilarious and interesting and makes you think differently. And Jeff, the thing that you always lauded it for, you always say like it makes you feel. I mean, it changes your body chemistry. You know, it makes you feel like a better person when you play. You feel smarter having played it. And it does that through challenge, not through through beating you down, you know. I mean, it's every positive thing you could say about something you could say about the video game Portal, amongst it just being on a crass visual, it's awesome, you know. It's like a cool looking, cool sounding
there goes our clean tag.
Great. Oh, my bad.
It'll be bleeped.
There's 8 second it's delay, right?
Yeah, it's fine.
You're allowed one. Aren't you allowed one?
Allowed 12, one. 20, yeah, now it's PG-13.
1224. Anyway, great game. It deserves that expletive. Great game. So it was Portal, right. Hands down.
Well, what Dan, you clearly haven't seen my film I made, Super Mario World, There Is an Escape. It's called A Green Tube. And it's doing pretty well. A pretty big hit. Super Mario World wins for me in this. Portal is amazing. I remember the first time I played it. What's great about it, and I agree with Dan and so much of what he said, what I think is so smart about Portal is that it makes you feel smart, but you also know it's a trick, right? Because you feel like you're discovering the answer, but there's only one answer to be discovered. And some people poo-poo the game for that, but I think it shows really smart level design and game design where you feel like you're like, oh, did anyone else find this? Yes, literally everyone else found that because that's how you beat that puzzle. But it doesn't feel contrived when you're doing it. But Super Mario World is pure joy to me. And
you get the same feeling, though, in that game where you're like, hey, did everybody else find this? Oh, yes, everybody. No, maybe not everybody else found it in Super Mario World because it was a secret warp level to the other part and maybe you had to jump on a turtle back and do stuff.
Well, that's true. I mean, this is representative of, and I don't think there's a right or wrong answer ever, but this is representative of, you know, story versus gameplay. And I love story. I love The Last of Us. But in this particular matchup, Super Mario World is important and close to my heart, and so I'd vote for it.
Well, wait a second. Forlorn. The gameplay of Portal, the gameplay, not just the story, which
the mechanics are great, it's sound, but it's not replayable, I don't think.
Really?
In the same way that, for me, it's not. Dan, are we breaking up over the air right now? I wasn't prepared for this.
I think we might have to. I'm going to
go to back to 479 and ask you to weigh in on Portal versus Super Mario World.
I deeply love Portal, but after like a few years, I think I'm going to go back and play Super Mario World more. Once I've solved Portal, and it was brilliant, don't get me wrong, but I still occasionally pick up my old Game Boy Advance and play Super Mario World. It's just so charming. The music's so great. And the platforming is so perfect. To me, it's easy to go back to. And once I've gone through Portal, which, like I said, was amazing, I kind of feel like I got it. And I can go back to Mario World again and again.
Yeah, I kind of agree, but the people disagree. Portal 56%, Super Mario World 43.3%. I think this, I don't know if this is another thing of a more recent game that has more.
No, it's just taste. Just taste.
Just taste. The thing that kills me is the idea that Super Mario World will get defeated and Super Mario 64 moves on.
Well, Galaxy 2 is the best Mario of all time.
That's not true.
It only exists because of the ones that came before it, but it's the best Mario.
I can't believe Portal almost didn't beat Super Metroid last week, and now it's beating Super Mario World. It's destroying two of the best Nintendo games ever. Wow. All right, moving right along. So that's it. That's your Elite Eight. Super Mario 64, Red Dead Redemption, Half-Life 2, a Tetris, Last of Us, Mass Effect 2, Skyrim, and Portal. Wow.
Man, there are a few stinkers on that.
I agree.
I'm only bummed. I'm honestly really only bummed about Skyrim, I think. Happy with everything else.
The show's running long. That was a lot of intense matchups, but I definitely want to get to tabletop time. Tabletop time? Because we didn't have one last week. And I'm really glad to have Dan on because he and I play Dungeons & Dragons regularly. Well, semi-regularly. as much as we talk about board games on the show, which I adore, role-playing games are a big part of what tabletop time is about as well. So, Dan, I want to get your take on, I've been DMing. You can feel free to throw me under the bus if you want, but tell me about the experience of playing Dungeons & Dragons. Is it something you would recommend to people? What do they need to have a good time, etc.?
Oh my goodness. That's loaded, Jeffrey. It's loaded. Dungeons & Dragons.
This ain't no easy show to be on, Dan. Can't sleepwalk through it.
I can't. Not like that other show we used to do. Dungeons & Dragons is phenomenal. It's funny, this guy in the chat is saying they need Pathfinder. We played Pathfinder. So we actually started out playing Living Greyhawk, a 3.0, right? D&D 3.0. And years and years ago, when we first met, that's how we first met, actually, as people. And enjoyed the heck out of that. We had a DM that made the game very fun. That was the key, was having a group of guys that were very like-minded. So the social experience is as fun as the game experience, if not more fun, you know? And it was the key to having fun in D&D is if you want to role play and you want to be very serious about it, to be with a group of people that also feel that way about it. And if you want to be more lighthearted and have a fun experience and you're creating funny visual ideas behind what you're doing in the game, things like that, then you have a group that is of that idea as well. Because if you're not in sync with that, then you're going to be at each other's heads and it's not going to be a great time for everyone. And the DM and choosing your DM is a big part of that as well, as the DM, the dungeon master, the game master, the guy who's running the game, really is in charge of the fun that you're having. That's what's great having Jeff as our game master, because he was played the game with us for so often, knew what the kind of experience that we want, and can be dynamic about it. The fun that I had recently in playing Dungeons & Dragons, and now we're playing 4.0. We did Pathfinder between, which is 3.5, and now we're playing 4.0, which is a more streamlined experience and much more designed to be almost more closer to video game mechanics than old role playing mechanics, but still being very much a role playing game. What's a lot of fun is when we play a game like Skyrim or Mass Effect, or when we have a game where we're faced with those role playing moments where we have are given choices and dialogue trees and things like that. We want that experience to be is like, oh, there's this guy in Mass Effect. There's a guy at a bar who I need to get information from. So how do I say the things to convince him to give me the information I want, but not piss him off or not be too well liked or whatever. However, you've chosen predetermined to be a good guy or a bad guy. In D&D, those moments can occur between the player and the dungeon master, and they are completely dynamic, and they are up to you as a person who is role playing to decide how you can pull that off. Can you be like Ferris Bueller in the restaurant and tell the guy you're Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago, and
except you're an elf.
Table? What's that?
Except you're an elf.
Except you're an elf, and you have to pull something off that it's a mixture of what you literally can come up with creatively mixed with a game of dice rolls. So there's an excitement of gambling, an excitement of chance mixed with skill and strategy based on what's the best, you know, what do I want to employ, or do I want to employ charisma, or do I want to employ diplomacy, or any of those things. And then, you know, you can have some fun combat experience as well, which is the thing that we think of more often with Dungeons and Dragons. So it's a phenomenal, it's an all-encompassing game. It can check off all the boxes you want out of a game experience as long as you have the right group of people to play with that want to play the way that you're playing, the way that you want
to
play.
Yeah, I think we've had a real evolution of just kind of figuring out how we wanted it to go. And it's a learning experience, especially, you know, I'm not somebody that grew up dungeon mastering, and it took a lot of learning on my part to even be competent at it. But more than that, I think, as you said, it's really about the dynamics of your specific group and figuring out how people like to play and what's fun for everybody. But I think we kind of found that fun. And for me, it was really locking into what makes those kinds of games different than a video game, which is, in a video game, you're always trying to kind of figure out what the game wants from you. You know, what does the game need me to do? I'm trying to complete these quests, and how does the game need me to do that? You know,
great point.
Right. Yeah. You're trying to figure out that system and plug yourself into it. Whereas the magic of playing a role-playing game like this, where you have a human being who can adapt and improvise and figure things out as you go, is that you don't really have to figure out what is wanted from you. You get to present ideas and, as a group, invent the outcomes, and your dungeon master hopefully will be dynamic enough to you know, roll with that kind of thing, or at least guide you in ways that are interesting and not stifling. And that's the magic of playing these kinds of games. And I wish that experience on anybody that enjoys video game role-playing games, because it's such a different kind of experience. It opens you up. It's instead of going, okay, what does the quest giver need me to do? Where do I need to go? Who do I need to kill? Et cetera, et cetera. It's really like, how do I want my character to exist in this world? And you guys were talking about the difference between Uncharted and Fallout, or whatever it was, those two games. A game where you're putting yourself into the role, or you're following a character. And I think this is even another step where not only are you in that role, but you get to define what that role is and define how you interact with that universe. You don't have to go by any pre-described, pre-programmed variables. So I hope people give it a shot. I think that I worry that video games have made people feel like they know what that experience is, rather than the fact that it really is a very different kind of experience.
Yeah, truly.
Hey, Christian, have you ever played a live role-playing game? And if not, do you have any desire to?
I did in middle school. I messed around with some, never got that serious into it. Always been the time commitment for me. I was always in a bunch of sports, and then I had video games and comic books and other nerdery. Oh,
you were busy beating up the people who were playing those games.
No,
right?
I was a day walker. You know what I mean?
yeah.
I walked among the worlds. I find it fascinating, and I'm envious of people that love it. I just don't. I've never had the time to commit to something like that, unfortunately.
It does take a lot of time. We have to definitely.
It does. Scheduling is the biggest friggin' monster we have to kill. It's the biggest impediment to fun is the scheduling of just everybody being in the same place at the same time. Mm-hmm. Speaking of scheduling, boy, the schedule for video game releases has gone crazy. I mean, we spent a whole episode talking about a whole bunch of stuff, none of which is the fact that huge games came out this week, including Titanfall, Dark Souls 2. I've been playing Yoshi's Island on the 3DS, which is really fun. It's pretty simplistic, but it's got a beautiful, beautiful art style, and it's that classic Yoshi's Island, digest bad guys, poop them out as an egg, use that egg as a projectile to get through the level, and you can do giant eggs now, or you roll this giant egg out of your behind somehow and project it through the world, and it crashes into stuff, kind of like giant Mario in the most recent 2D Mario games. So I've been really digging that game. I started South Park Stick of Truth, which I've been dying to play ever since it came out. And my gosh, it's hilarious. And I will talk more about that next week as well. Dan, how come you aren't playing Dark Souls 2? Tell the people.
I'm barely not playing it, first of all. I'm devouring as much as I possibly can with it. I am waiting for the PC version to come out. I played the original on 360. but I just feel one, my PS3 is barely in commission. I'd rather not play something on a PS3. I would rather have a next gen experience, which on the PC it's going to be. The graphics are going to be far superior, the PC version, so the press release says. In addition to that, what's new with Dark Souls 2 is that there's now a voice chat in co-op summoning. And I don't have a mic for my PS3. I feel like most people don't use mics with their PS3. That was very prevalent on an Xbox. I don't have a 360 hooked up anymore. So for that, for the multiplayer experience and for the next-gen graphical experience, I'm going to wait for – and also, I think it's going to last longer. Dark Souls 2 will probably be a game I play for a very, very, very long time, not just to complete it, but then in returning to it and making different character builds and things like that, and multiplayer. So I don't want my PS3 around that much longer, and I want – I think the PC will have the longevity for it. That being said, I just bought the strategy guide. So I already plan out the character I want to make, and just to be able to immerse myself in as much of it as possible. I've been watching streams, though I'm trying to keep it very minimal so I don't spoil too much for myself. I've been checking the wiki daily and the forums. I'm just totally devouring as much as I possibly can before, so I'm ready to rock as soon as it hits PC. And I might cave. I might get it. Start out a bill just to see and then return it and get the PC version. But I'm trying to not cave. So far, so good.
Christian, what have you been playing?
I finished the single player campaign of Killzone. I've been clearing the deck after seeing the Need for Speed movie, which you have a newest, latest, best mini about. People can check out on your YouTube page. And you and I also were a guest on... a movie podcast out now with Aaron and Abe, where we talked about it a little more in depth. But I went back to Need for Speed Rivals on PS4, and I had fun with that. I'm just trying to clear deck. I have Metal Gear Tuesday, tonight, tomorrow, whenever you're listening to this, and Infamous coming. And I apologize if I said this. I don't think I did. The role-playing game I got into the most was Vampire the Masquerade. Back in the day. But yeah, right now those are the games that are on my horizon. And I'm still messing around with Dead Rising 3 too. Just kind of tinkering as I wait for the next big games that interest me.
No, but neither of you guys into Titanfall, huh?
I played a lot of the beta.
I wonder how much that is. That honestly was like, oh, it scratched the itch and people didn't need to buy it. I wonder if that was actually...
Well, that's the thing that I learned from the... Sorry.
Go ahead, Dan.
I would totally own Titanfall if it was $20 or even $30. But it doesn't feel like, especially having played the beta so much, that I would get enough more of an experience out of it for $60. A part of that's because it's a game that's less of my taste. But if I had to play a first person shooter, I would want to play Titanfall. I loved the traversal of the pilot. I loved a lot of aspects of the game, but I don't think it's worth its price right now.
So remind me next week, Jeff, because I did some table topping recently, and I had put those thoughts down together with some of my feelings about multiplayer games as well. So when we have a little more time. That's a little tease. We can dive into that discussion, but that will answer my Titanfall interest as well.
Yeah, we'll definitely have more time next week. There's fewer March Madness matchups next week, and that will leave, I think, more time for us to talk about all these great games that are coming out. I'm excited. Of course, there's going to be big GDC news next week. I'm playing Titanfall like crazy. I'm still in the fun, but there's so many things to play. I want to get back into Diablo because the expansion's coming out. South Park is a lot of fun. You did?
Two nights ago, I started playing Diablo 3.
Oh, no, I need to get back into it, really.
Yeah. It's hooks. It's just so addictive. It's frustrating. It's really frustratingly addictive. But, yeah, great game.
Well... tune in next week. We're going to talk lots more about that. Dan, thanks for hanging out with us this week and helping us make some really tough decisions. It's always fun to hang out with you again. But until we meet again, where can the people see your stuff or find out what's going on with you?
Probably Twitter would be the best place. At DannyTRS on Twitter. And whenever there's news of things I'm doing, I will probably be tweeting that out.
Very, very cool. How about you, Christian? What's going on for you this week?
I'm doing a show this Wednesday in Venice. It's phenomenal if you're in the LA area, called the Venice Underground. Next Wednesday, I'm at the Irvine Improv, again, Southern California shows, but they're always great. And it's out now. I don't think Nerdist has their post up about it, but I do a stand-up podcast. It's a live show, and then stand-ups you've heard of. Or should have heard of, talking about how we write new material and where it comes from. And it's called What's New with Christian Spicer. It's on the Nerdist Network, and it's monthly. Episode 6 just went live today. So you can check it out. See if you like it. It was a fun episode. So maybe give that a whirl. And Twitter, whatever. You know this stuff, right?
I do. I know the stuff. I got some new stuff happening. As you mentioned, I'm doing NLB minis on my YouTube page. Reviewed Need for Speed and The Raid 2 last week. Got Muppets coming up this week, and my thoughts about True Detective and maybe some other goodies that you guys might enjoy. You can check that out. My YouTube page is Kanata Jeff. That's with two N's and one T. Or you can just go to my webpage, jeffkanata.com, done by Squarespace, might I add. And or follow me on Twitter at Jeff Kanata with two N's and one T. I'm excited. GDC's week is kicking off. We're going to have really fun stuff to talk about next week. You can tune in live every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, and participate in the chat room, which is awesome. Thanks to everybody that's been hanging out in there. Or call in and have your voice heard on our show as well. Until next week, when all of that stuff happens, very excited. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.